We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like your boy Foch, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. Whether you were Tyrese Haliburton dealing with a hamstring injury that took time to get back to normal, this is why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of Setting the Pace. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or as we like to call it, EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, you're going to want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're in the United States or Canada, it doesn't matter. There's hundreds of other locations across the globe. Access to a center is easy and affordable. How much cash you got on you? Oh, doesn't matter. I bet you could afford Unified Healing and what the EE System is bringing to the table. Now, if you're interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself, go to unifiedhealing.com/pace to learn more and find a center near you. That is UNIFYD healing.com/pace. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare providers with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including the EE System.
This is Tyrese Haliburton, and you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Indiana, home of Pacers basketball.
Miller for three, and he got it.
Legends have been born.
Miller retreats to the three-point line and hits again.
Memories have been made.
Haliburton, a deep three for the lead. And baby!
Great basketball has been played.
Nembhard away. Hits the three at the buzzer to win the game.
In 49 states, it's just basketball.
Flips it to the big fella, fake shoots, and hits!
But this is Indiana. And you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Let's go! Go!
Your go-to Pacers podcast.
Setting the Pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the Pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the Pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the Pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
We got Pacers hooping. Let's talk stats. Hot takes. All facts. New topics. Updates. Three pointers. Fast breaks. We keep scoring. We don't need to stop. New episodes. Weekly drops. This your number one podcast. Sweeping every team, we gon' need a mop.
Setting like pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
Pacer Nation, welcome back to Setting the Pace, your go-to Pacers podcast. No Alex Golden tonight, but fear not, because we are joined by author and former Pacers beat writer for The Star and Pacers.com, Mark Monteith. Mark currently covers Indiana sports through the Indianapolis Business Journal. Mark, How you doing?
Doing great. Good to be with you.
Awesome. I appreciate having you back on. Alex and I always love having you on the last few years. And, Mark, we're in the midst of Pacer playoff basketball. Pacer fans have not been able to attend a home playoff game dating back to 2018. So this crowd, I mean, I'm anxious for this crowd. What sort of crowd do you think we could expect at Gamebridge on Friday night?
I think it'll be lively. It'll be loud. I think that 5:30 start will kind of contribute to that. People may get off work a little bit early. I think it'll be kind of a festive mood. It kind of reminds me of a game when the Pacers went through most of the 80s without playing in the playoffs. They played in 81 playoffs and got swept. And then they weren't back in it until 87, I guess it was. And I just remember the atmosphere in those games was really electric because people were hungry, whenever you're denied something for a long period of time and then you get it, you're excited about it. It's like the first drink of water after you walk through the desert for a while. So I think that's kind of what it's going to be like tomorrow night at the field house. The fans have waited a long time for this and they're excited by the fact that the Pacers won game two. So Pacers have home court advantage now. So there's a lot of opportunity there. So I expect it to be really rowdy.
Just think it's such a different type of feeling when you tie it up and it's 1-1 instead of trailing 2 games to nothing. It's a totally different thing. But as we're recording this, including the play-in games, home teams are it's 18-3 in the playoffs, and that's it's a big difference. Just how vital is this game three in Indiana? No Giannis in sight, and an opportunity to really control the rest of this series.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Without Giannis, you've got to take advantage of that opportunity. And it'll be interesting to see how the Pacers respond to this. They didn't respond to their opportunity in game one. Some of those guys, who had no playoff experience did not handle that moment well. Well, this is a different moment. This is a time now where you have a great opportunity. Now, home fans are going to be really jacked up. So how do you handle that? Do you stay calm? Do you have your poise? Or do you let your emotions get the best of you? It's a new kind of challenge that really most of these guys have never faced before. I suppose Miles Turner has had opportunities somewhat like this, but it's a different kind of pressure on your home court. It's kind of the it's not e easy, but it's there's an advantage to being the underdog on the road where the expectations aren't there and the home team has a lot of expectations. And that is kind of reversed now tomorrow night for the Pacers because everyone's going to be jacked up. Everyone knows the Pacers have a great opportunity now. How do you handle that? You could go back to other playoff series the Pacers have been in where they won a road game and got home court advantage, but they couldn't take advantage of it on their home court. So it'll be interesting in a lot of different ways tomorrow.
Yeah, and you mentioned about how the moment felt a little too big for some players in game one, and it did. I think in specific, Ben Shepherd, Andrew Nembhard, Aaron Nesmith, they didn't play their best games, and I think in game two, those were three players that excelled for the Pacers. But game two had a lot of changes. What were some of the biggest improvements that you enjoyed seeing for the Pacers in game two compared to game one?
Boy, I love the way they moved the ball. Every
Historic.
Pacer played well in game two. Everyone who played meaningful minutes played really well. And that kind of balance is what has to see the Pacers through this. That's their strength, really. They're a deep team, not as deep when they don't have Ben Mathurin, but they're still a deep team. They had guys who didn't get into that game who we know can contribute, like Jalen Smith and Isaiah Jackson. And I'm still a fan of Jarace Walker, so I think they need to maintain that balanced effort. I know some people are kind of down, on certain players who aren't playing as well as they had earlier in the season, and I think I like the balance. That's what I go for. Now, we have seen some great individual performances in the series so far, but I still am really excited about the balance because I think you can't count on Siakam to have 35-point games as you go through the series. He might. I mean, he's awfully good, and it was fun to watch him in games one and two, but you don't rely on that. And I'm sure Milwaukee will make some adjustments to try to keep him under control better. But we know that the Pacers have other guys who can step up and have big games, big scoring games. So, you know, it could be Halliburton. It could be Nesmith. You know, Nembhard had 20 the other night. There's a lot of different guys on that Pacer roster who can get you 20 points in any given game. So I think they need to just rely on ball movement as they did in game two, and not be relying too heavily on any one player. I love it when they build the offense around Siakam, but that doesn't mean he has to shoot 25 times a game or whatever. So to me, balance is the key to this Pacer team.
It really is. That's been their strength. I mean, the 38 assists last game was just it was a franchise playoff record. I mean, you had four players in the starting lineup give you six assists or more. That said a lot. Anytime you know, there's going to be a defense going up against that, it's going to be a long night. So for the Bucks, what changes do you think they might make in Game 3 to try and slow down the Pacers, a team that already plays with great pace that's even better at home?
Yeah, I guess it has to start with defending Siakam. You know, the way he's hurt them, they've got to do something to try to keep him under control. That'll be difficult because he's such a great one-on-one player. You know, they could throw different bodies at him. You know, maybe not rely on one guy, but keep a fresh defender on him at all times. They've tried zone, but it hasn't worked. So I wouldn't expect to see too much of that. You could mix it up a little bit, but the Pacers have handled that well. So, you know, I don't know who their best defender for Siakam is, but I think they would maybe throw different bodies at him. Whenever, from the Pacer perspective, when they've had trouble with a particular player in the playoffs, whether it's Allen Iverson or somebody like that, they've done pretty well by throwing different bodies at him, just to give him different looks and to try to keep him off balance a little bit and to keep a fresh defender on him. So I think maybe you might see the same thing from Milwaukee tomorrow, is keep a fresh defender on Siakam at all times, give him different looks, whether it's a smaller defender, a bigger defender. But it's not going to be easy regardless, because he's got so many ways of scoring.
I don't want to say that Siakam can only go down from here, because he's been amazing, but that's kind of what it seems. I mean, he has, in games one and two, the only player to actually accomplish what he's done of 35 points or more and 10 rebounds is Wilt Chamberlain in 1967. So that says a lot anytime you're in the same breath as Wilt. So for the Bucks, you know, obviously we know where they're trying to have the ball go and what the Pacers have had struggles with. And that's Damian Lillard, specifically in the first half. He's looked like Superman in the first half. He's looked kind of pedestrian in the second half. He's got 61 points combined in the first half, just 8 points combined in the second half. What do you think the Pacers can do differently to duplicate the second half success guarding Dame to try and make it happen in the first half?
Yeah, it'll be different. It'll be difficult. I mean, and I don't know. I mean, Nembhard has done a good job on him. And I think, you know, Nembhard, as he gains confidence in this playoff series, can probably play better. But you got to give Lillard credit. I mean, he's just a great player. He's a great offensive player, particularly. I would be willing to give him some of those points, make him work at the defensive end. And again, that's where the Pacer balance comes in. If Nembhard or whoever Lillard is guarding is in part of your offense, you know, if he's involved, that's going to keep pressure on Lillard, and you'll wear him down, and he won't be as good in the second half. He's not known as a defender.
No.
And he doesn't really want to put too much energy into that end of it. So while a lot of teams might have someone that you can, where he can hide a little bit on defense, the Pacers aren't set up that way, again, because of their balance. So, I mean, Nembhard just needs to do the best he can. If he ever gets tired, you could throw Nesmith at him. He's also an outstanding defender. But I'd be willing to give him his first half points if you're going to wear him down and limit him in the second half, as they have done so far. And again, that's making him work on defense and just do the best you can. And, you know, he probably won't be as comfortable in Gainbridge Fieldhouse as he was in Milwaukee. So you'll have a little bit of a home court advantage there. That should play into it as well. You could probably get away with a little bit more from the officiating with that home court advantage, and, you know, be a little more physical with him. But just keep doing what you're doing. And if he gets off and gets 12, 14 points in the quarter, you have to live with that. You know, you're talking about a future Hall of Fame player, and he's going to have his moments.
Hey, he was a guy that was named the top 75 all time by the NBA. And you can't call his deep three-pointers luck because he has a history of making them. So yeah. I do think that, you know, you're right. Yes, there are probably going to be quarters where he might score 15 points or, you know, 19 points like he's done. But those legs have proved to have gotten tired as the game goes on. And the Pacers' pace has really kind of worn him out. But just like you touched on, I think the Pacers are onto something attacking him. You know, when they've had Andrew Nembhard really be able to put that pressure on him, or if they can get switches. And there was one possession in specific where Dame was guarding Pascal Siakam. It didn't last long. Siakam got to the basket in just one dribble. So do you think one of the keys is really, hey, can the Pacers get these switches where they can have Dame be that primary defender and just continue to attack and attack and attack?
Yeah. That's ball movement. You know, you keep moving the ball and setting screens, you know, you'll force him onto different defenders. And at the other end, you know, the Pacers they're capable of switching a lot just because of the nature of their lineup. Really, other than Turner, the other guys can pretty much guard any position. So, you don't want Halliburton guarding, you know, one of their bigger guys, Lopez or whoever, but still there's a lot of flexibility, with the Pacers on defense, with Nembhard and Nesmith, Halliburton, some of the other guys as well. So, again, that's their flexibility and balance. So, yeah, you know, make Lillard work on defense as much as you can and keep attack the basket, and rely on home court advantage a little bit as well. You could probably get away with a little bit more here.
I think you could. I look forward to, you know, hopefully being able to get away with just a little bit more. I mean, that is the perks of being at home, but
we're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Mark, talk to me about which sort of Tyrese Halliburton Indiana needs in order to be most successful. You couldn't have found a bigger storyline amongst, you know, the Pacers fan base in game one than what's wrong with Tyrese? Why isn't he shooting? Well, he did shoot more in game two, but not significantly more. Gets three more shots up, but it didn't matter. The Pacers had it going on. He got the job done primarily with 12 assists, which should be something that everybody's celebrating. He now currently leads the playoffs in assists by the time we're recording this. What Halliburton does Indiana need if they can, you know, just say, hey, we're getting the job done with this version?
I'm perfectly fine with game two Halliburton. You know, I have never been a fan of having your point guard taking the most field goal attempts in a game. I think offenses generally work that well when your point guard is your leading scorer and taking the most shots. There are exceptions, but it hasn't happened very often for the Pacers in their history. And I've looked this up. And when they have had their point guard as their leading scorer, they weren't a good team. It just doesn't work because the point guard is there to distribute. Now, is Steph Curry a point guard? I don't know. To me, he's really not, because Draymond Green has always led Golden State in assists. Curry might bring the ball up, but he's not really a point guard. So Halliburton, to me, if he has 12 assists, I'm perfectly happy with that. And I don't care how much he scores. I don't want him to pass up any shots. And I would expect him to hit a couple 3-pointers a game. But even when he was on a roll early in the season and hitting those step back threes off the dribble and getting everybody really excited. I was a little bit uncomfortable with that because I didn't think that was sustainable or the best way to approach it. Again, going back to the Pacer balance, they have so many guys who can score. Haliburton needs to distribute the ball first and foremost. And that's particularly true now that Siakam is comfortable with this offense and scoring 30, 35 a game. He's the one who should be taking the most shots because he's got the most ways to score and he can get to the rim. You know, so many of his shots are in the lane, whereas Haliburton may be throwing up 25, 30 footers. So I don't mind one bit that Haliburton doesn't shoot as much or even as accurately as he did early in the season. I don't know if he has any physical issues, if he's 100% healthy or not, but he's healthy enough and he can always distribute the ball. You can have off shooting nights, but you're not likely to have off passing nights.
Exactly.
You know, it's a lot easier to connect on a pass than it is a 30 foot shot. So I like the way he played in game two. I think he needs to keep playing that way. Yeah, take your open three-pointers, but don't be dribbling around looking for a three-pointer. Keep the ball moving. Keep Milwaukee's defense challenged at all times. Keep Siakam as the heart of the offense. Keep Turner involved, which they've done a great job of doing. And I think you'll be just fine. Don't worry about Haliburton whatsoever.
And look, the flow of the game will dictate certain aspects of it. You know, if the Pacers are down 20, yes, they're going to need Tyrese Haliburton to be more aggressive. But if we're playing our style of basketball, then I'm more than fine if he only does have 10, 12, 13 shots compared to, you know, everybody asks him to have 15 to 20 shots. It's just not really his game. And when you talk about some other point guards that are more scorers, you know, you think of like a Russell Westbrook or a Damian Lillard. Those guys haven't won in the playoffs. So right. I think that when you're trying to lead a team, I think Haliburton's style is what you want. And I think the shots will come. I think he will have a vintage Haliburton performance at some point. But yeah, you know, in my opinion, the way that Pascal Siakam is playing right now, I know it sounds like a lot on paper, but does it feel like he needs to get those 25 shots or more if he has it going? Because Indiana's had those times where they've went away from him at times in the regular season, and you wish he had a little bit more. Right now, you have something that's working. And in my opinion, until the Bucks have shown that they can stop him, I think they have to keep playing through Siakam and make sure that he's consistently getting those shots up.
Yeah, because he's so good at getting to the basket. So many of his shots, as I said, are in the lane. He often looks a little bit awkward, but you know he's under control.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're talking about mid-range shots with him for the most part, although he is an effective three-point shooter. And keep milking that for all you can. You know, I'm talking about balance a lot here, but I want Siakam to be at the head of that balance. You know, he's the guy who should get the ball the most during the season when he was just kind of another guy in the offense and wasn't getting more. They generally didn't win those games. You know, he's just so effective around the basket, and he'll dish it off. He's the guy you want leading the offense. And Siakam is a clutch player. I mean, he obviously hasn't shrunk from the moment here in the playoffs. I mean, he stepped up big time, and those are the guys who you need to build your offense around in the playoffs. You can count on them. You know, Siakam, I went back and looked. When Toronto won the championship, in the closeout game, which I believe was a game seven, he had like 28, 29 points. You know, he was big time in that game. Everybody talked about Kawhi Leonard, you know, for the Raptors that year, but Siakam was huge for them in their championship season. So he obviously can handle any pressure situation on any crucial possession, which most possessions in a playoff game are. You want him involved. Doesn't mean he has to touch the ball every time, but you want him more involved than anyone else. And go through him. And there are other times when you go through Turner, and Haliburton will have his moments, and everybody else will too. But Siakam is a guy who can handle the moment. He's got a variety of ways to score, and he's on a roll, so you got to take advantage of that.
Yeah, and you mentioned Turner, and I think that Turner was night and day from game one. Game one struggled a bit. I think he was about 5-17 from the field. You know, game two, extremely efficient, 22 points, a playoff career high. Also had 6 assists, which is a playoff career high and something that he hasn't even done in, I think it was dating back to 2017. So it had been quite some time. Overall, really good performance from Miles Turner. You know, that makes the Pacers big. It's something they weren't, you know, before they got Pascal Siakam. But between Siakam and Turner, they now have that size that you really need in the playoffs, especially against a team like Milwaukee. you know, for Miles Turner, just how vital is he to what the Pacers want to do? Because if he can be who you hope he is and who he was in the regular season, Pacers can have sort of that big three, which is what you need in the playoffs. So, you know, Turner, a guy that's never been out of the first round. I mean, how important is this series to him? Because last time we saw Turner in the playoffs, totally different guy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got to be huge for him, and he needs to have a big series. You think about it, Turner's been here a long time, and he's played in a lot of playoff games for the Pacers, a lot of first-round exits, but still a lot of playoff games. And how many great playoff moments can you think of for Miles Turner? None, really, right? He hasn't had any big games, big shots or whatever that I can recall in the playoffs. You know, it's either been Oladipo or other guys who have stepped up for the Pacers in the postseason since Turner has been here. So this is a moment for him, and there's not a lot of pressure on him because of Siakam and Halliburton, you know, so he can kind of pick a spot. And if Milwaukee's going to play zone, you know, Turner has shown you can put him in the middle of it and he'll know what to do there. And he can hit those 10, 15 foot shots inside that zone. So I was really disappointed in him in game one, as the veteran on the team, you know, with the most playoff experience. He should have been able to step up and have a big game, but he didn't. But he was really good in game two. Look, you're allowed to have off nights in a playoff series, but he needs to have a big series overall, no question, because as you mentioned, you kind of need three guys. Two guys usually aren't enough in a playoff series, and he needs to be another guy. Hit some three-pointers, sure, but above all else, rebound and block shots and be a presence in the middle. Take Milwaukee's big men away from the basket to increase the Pacers' rebounding opportunities. He's really crucial to this. And as long as he's been around here and given how the Pacers have rewarded him contractually, he needs to step up in this series, no question.
I definitely agree with that, and I think that he will. I think that Turner had success against the Bucks in the regular season. We acknowledge game one was tough, but game two, he looked great. One of the unsung heroes, I think, for Indiana. That's probably, you can go down the list, name quite a few guys that are going to get credit before he does, is Aaron Nesmith. Nesmith is someone that, you know, he matched Chris Middleton essentially second for second last game defensively, held him to just 15 points. I know Chris Middleton is banged up right now, but how under the radar important is Aaron Nesmith and what he brings to what the Pacers want to accomplish defensively when we know they are by no means an elite defensive unit?
Yeah. All the Pacers are crucial because of the balance that they rely on. But Nesmith is, I really like him. You know, he's such a good defender. He is an alpha. He's your probably most aggressive player at both ends of the court. He can hit three pointers, but he'll attack the basket, and he's just a really solid defender. So he's so important to the team. I wouldn't say he's unsung, but he certainly does fly under the radar quite often, as you mentioned. So, yeah, if he can contain Middleton the way he has, that's also a big element. Usually when people look at how somebody performs in the playoffs, they tend to just look at their scoring average, you know, and they kind of ignore what defense means in the playoffs. I remember a playoff series George Hill had for the Pacers when they played Toronto one year. And he held Kyle Lowry like 8 points under his average. And George Hill didn't score a lot in that series. But, you know, and people didn't talk about George Hill, but he had a huge series because he really contained Kyle Lowry the year they played Toronto in the playoffs. So that is important. If you hold a player 8 points under his average in the playoff series, that's like adding 8 points to your scoring average. Mm-hmm. Same thing, really. So Nesmith will be really important that way. You can't shut down Middleton either, but Nesmith can certainly contain him, and he'll get you some points too. He'll get you some points, and he'll make plays that keep the crowd in the game with dunks or whatever. You know, another crucial guy, no question.
Yeah, you know, Chris Middleton had 15 points in the second half in game one. In game two, he just scored 15 points. So I think that was a big difference. But also, you know, 11 points that Nesmith gave you, and no one's going to write home about it and celebrate, but he also gave you 7 assists. He hustled really hard on defense, just made a lot of key contributions to the Pacers. Now, you know, as we wrap up, look, Mark, neither of us are certified to give medical advice, but apparently Giannis isn't progressing to the point maybe Milwaukee had hoped. At what point in the series do you think Milwaukee could smash that emergency glass and bring Giannis back? Do you think it's maybe if they're facing elimination? Or at this point, do you kind of look in the mirror and say, if this isn't the year, are you really going to waste or risk furthering that injury after you saw Kevin Durant blow out his Achilles in the NBA Finals when that was once ruled just a calf injury?
Right. Yeah, you know, we're not inside his body. We don't know exactly what kind of condition he's in, what the risks would be. You cannot risk, you know, somebody's future health or whatever for, excuse me, one basketball game. But at the same time, sometimes you got to play with pain. You know, that's their medical staff has to make the decision if he's able to play and whether he will be risking more serious injury. But, you know, sometimes you have to step up too. Now, the danger for Milwaukee is if you bring him back, you know, say for game four, say if Pacers win tomorrow and they lead 2-1 and they are, you know, having an opportunity to go up 3-1, you know, you bring him back, it's almost a disruption, though, to Milwaukee. You know, they played without him for a while. You throw him back in there, and if he's not at full strength, is he going to help you or not? You know, he may not. Go back to the Pacers playoff series against Atlanta in 1996. You know, Reggie Miller had the eye injury. He missed the last, I don't know, seven regular season games. He missed the first few playoff games. The Pacers were competitive. They were at home game five of a playoff series, first round. He comes back, and he had like 28 points or something, but the Pacers lost because they were used to playing without him, and he was really – kind of disruptive, that he even acknowledged that after the game. He said, I might have hurt him more than I helped him. So you bring Giannis back at some point in the series, if he's not, you know, close to 100%, I'm not sure that's a plus for the Bucks because they've gotten used to playing without him. And if he's not at full strength, then how much good does he really do? So it's a dilemma for the Bucks. If he never comes back, he's going to take a lot of heat, I'm sure, from the fans in Milwaukee. Your star player, you expect him to be out there, and we all think guys should play with pain, but should you play with injury? That's a different thing. And do you run a risk of making the injury worse? True, he would have all the offseason to recover from whatever injury he has, but still, you don't want to run a risk. And you also, you can't force him back, for one thing. The Bucks can't make him go play. They need to maintain their relationship with him. You know, you don't want him feeling like they're using him. So there's a lot of factors that go into whether he comes back or not and when he comes back. And it's a real dilemma for the Bucks. It's really a, even though the Pacers miss Ben Mathurin quite a bit, they don't miss him like the Bucks miss Giannis. So it's a nice little benefit for the Pacers.
It's a tricky situation because this isn't the NBA Finals. If you bring him back, it's not like you're going to, you know, and the Bucks win the series, say, it's not like they're going to rest him for a game one. It's like you bring him back. You're bringing him back for what could be, you know, 4 to 20 games almost, you know, it's between all these rounds. So it's still a lot of wear and tear that could be on that calf that is probably nowhere near healthy. But, yeah, that's a decision we'll leave to the Bucks. But – Mark, I want to really thank you for coming back on. Appreciate it. Loved your insight, you know, on what we've seen so far and what we could expect to see. But please tell everybody where they could find some of your great work and find you on social media.
Yeah, at Mark Monteith on Twitter. I'm on Facebook as well. I write for the Indianapolis Business Journal, a sports article on the back of every issue of the Indianapolis Business Journal. And I've got book projects going. And my latest is that I have edited a book that was written on Indy 500 champion Bill Vukovich back in the 1950s by a local sports writer, Angelo Angelopoulos. Angelo was a great talent as a sports writer, maybe the best the city has ever had. And he wrote this book on Bill Vukovich after Vukovich was killed in the 1955 race. Angelo wrote the book in the late 50s, but it never got published. And I got wind of the manuscript about a year ago, and it's out now. It's on Amazon. It's at bookstores like Barnes & Noble. It's out there. And it was really a fun project to get this thing published, knowing that it had been in somebody's closet, you know, for decades here. So I think it's a good book. And I wrote about Angelo to get his story out there, and they brought the Vukovich story up to date as well. So the book is called Vukovich, The Man Who Wouldn't Lift, referring to lifting off the throttle in the turns. And that's my latest project too, so people can look for that.
Very cool stuff. I honestly learned a lot right over there. I don't think that's people knew enough about that. So thanks for sharing that. You got to check that out on Amazon. Mark, we appreciate you. We look forward to having you back on in the future. And once again, thanks again.
Okay, thank you, Michael.
All right, we are back. Great stuff from Mark Monteith. Gotta love him. Great insight as to what we've seen so far from the Pacers, but also some of the changes that Indiana might have to make and some of the changes that Milwaukee may be forced to make. But before we sign off, everybody, if you have not checked out some of the awesome merch that we have available, I've been checking my mailbox each and every day, checking my phone. Where is my Beat the Bucks shirt at? It is an athletic shirt that way I can wear it in the gym. I could wear it this summer. I'm really excited for it. I'm hopeful, and I believe that it will be here just in time for Game 3. But it's not just the Beat the Bucks shirt. We have, I think, three or four other designs out there in just about every type of material or color that you could possibly think of. But, hey, not just shirts. We have other accessories, hoodies. We got a lot out there on TeePublic. So definitely got to check that out. And you could also check us out on Twitter at PacersPodSTP. You could check Alex out on Twitter at AlexGoldenNBA. I can be found on Twitter at underscore FACCI. You could find us on Instagram at PacersPodSTP. You could find us on Facebook at Setting the Pace. You can find us on TikTok Setting the Pace. You can find us on YouTube at Setting the Pace, a Pacers podcast. And if you are absolutely jacked up out of your mind for Game 3 in Gamebridge, no, I will not be there where we need this win, then hit me with a Let's Go Pacers!